You kids all go to Sunday school? No? No? Some of you do. Let's see. Who is, a quiz question, just to get a sense of where we are here. Who is Vyasadeva? Who knows, show your hand if you know amongst the children. Who is Vyasadeva? Who is Vyasadeva? Who is Vyasadeva? You've heard Vyasadeva before, right? You've heard. Who is Vyasadeva? You had your hand up, didn't you? What is he? He wrote all the Vedas. Anybody disagree with that statement? Vyasadeva wrote all the Vedas. You want to edit that comment, Drew? Okay. Anybody want to edit that statement? I want to edit that statement. He didn't exactly write the Vedas, like you might write a homework assignment, right? But Vyasa didn't just write the Vedas, he compiled the Vedas. He compiled the Vedas. What did he compile the Vedas from? Before he compiled the Vedas, what were they? I don't know. They were present through sound. They were present through oral tradition. Where did Vyasadeva hear the Vedas? From whom did Vyasadeva hear the Vedas before he compiled the Vedas? Who was Vyasadeva's spiritual master? Don't say it out loud. Raise your hand. The spiritual master of Vyasadeva. You know. You don't know? Right. Yes. Narada Muni. You knew, you just weren't telling us. Narada Muni. Narada Muni. And who is Narada Muni's spiritual master? The spiritual master of Narada Muni was... Is that half a yes, or you don't know? You don't know. Who is the father of Narada Muni? Yes. Lord Brahma. Oh, yeah. And who is the spiritual master of Lord Brahma? Go ahead. Try, give it a try. Lord Vishnu, right. So how was Lord Brahma born? Dhruv knows that one. He was born from the lotus flower that came from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And one of the first sons... Well, the first sons of Narada were the four Kumaras, and then Lord Shiva, and then great sages like Narada, just born from the body of Lord Brahma. Okay. Then Narada was the spiritual master of Vyasadeva. And what did Vyasadeva do?
He compiled
the Vedas. Right. Originally the Vedas were this big, vast body of knowledge that was present in sound. Because before this age, people didn't have to... They went to school, but they didn't have books. They just heard. And they heard, and they remembered. And they could say anything that they heard any time in their whole life, just they heard it once. They have good memories. But in Kali Yuga, people lose their memory. Like, we can't remember who Vyas was, and who Brahma was, and who Narada was, although we've heard it so many times. Because we forget. So we have the things written down so we can help remember. So, here's a, from Mahabharata. What's Mahabharata? Mahabharata, what's Mahabharata? Yeah, what is it?
Battle between Arjuna and Duryodhana.
Okay.
How Krishna tells Arjuna why to fight.
That's Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna on the Kurukshetra battlefield because there was war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And the Kauravas were headed by Duryodhana. And the Pandavas were headed by Yudhishthira, Bhima. We can't forget Bhima. And Yudhishthira, and Arjuna, and Krishna. But Mahabharata is a big epic. It's the whole knowledge of the history of India. Of actually, not just the history of India, the history of the planet, because at the time, the planet was Bharat, Varsha. The whole planet. One big government. So in Mahabharata, it describes how Vyasadeva was born. Who was the father of Vyasadeva? That's too difficult, right? Forget it. Parashramuni. Parashramuni. Parashramuni was a great sage. I'm going to weave into Canto 1, Chapter 2 in just a minute. But a great sage named Parashramuni one day was crossing. He wanted to cross a river. So the way that he would cross the river, he got in a boat. And the person who was plying the boat was a young woman named Satyavati. I'm going to ask you that name again, so put on your memory cap. Satyavati. Satyavati. She was the daughter of a fisherman. And her father thought, if my daughter does some seva for some sadhus, she may get the blessing from some sadhus, and then maybe she'll become very spiritually fortunate, just by the blessing of some sadhu. So, he requested her, you take the service of taking boats across the river. Maybe one day when sadhu will come, you get in the boat and you'll get the sadhu's blessing. And that's what happened. Parashramuni was very expert in many things dealing with the scripture. And one of those things he was very expert at was Vedic astrology and astronomy. What's astrology? Astrology.
Study the hand,
that's palmistry. What's astrology? You look at the stars, the astros out there, all the planets, and based upon the configuration of planets, you can tell the influences of the planets at any given time and place. That's astrology. So, he was doing an astrological calculation. He didn't have a computer or a, you know,
calculator.
He had a mind that was a calculator. And he was calculating. And by the configuration of the stars, he could understand that if this very period of time that he was crossing the river, it was a very, very, very auspicious time when an incarnation of the Lord was to appear. He got very excited. And he told that to Satyavati. and said, "My dear girl, an incarnation of the Lord is to appear. Would you be the bearer of that child, an incarnation of the Lord?" And she thought, "What do you mean? I'm not married." And he said, "Well, that's okay. I'll be the father and you become the mother, but you won't lose your purity. Don't worry." "Well, what will everybody say? I mean, here we are in the middle of the boat, in the middle of the river, and..." "Don't worry. I'll make an island that's transcendentally, nobody can see. That's like mystical island, a dvipa. His name is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas." What does dvipa mean? Dvipa. Like Jambu Dvipa or Madhya Dvipa or Dvipa, Nava Dvipa. Dvipa. Yes? Island. Very good. Very good. Dvipa means island. So, like Sveta Dvipa, the white island, that's where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In this universe, there's Sveta Dvipa, a white island. And he's in the middle of that, the milk ocean on Sveta Dvipa, right? Dvipa means island. So he's Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas. He's Krishna because he's not just a powerful person, but he's an incarnation of Krishna. And he was born on an island. So he's Dvaipayana. And he's called Vyasa because he... Vyasa means divides. He divided the Vedas. The Vedas were originally one large body of information, and he divided the Vedas into four. Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda. Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, and Atharva Veda. The four Vedas. So, Vyasadev was then born of Satyavati and Parashramuni. And she received this benediction from Parashramuni. As soon as the child is conceived, immediately he'll be born as a fully mature young man. So no one will understand that for some period of time you've been pregnant. He'll be born and no one will even know. And no one knew except Vyas and Satyavati. It was all a mystical arrangement for the Lord's appearance. When Vyas, this becomes important later in Mahabharata, when Vyas was born, he stood before his mother, whose name was Satyavati, and said, "My dear mother, because of this wonderful service that you have done, I am at your command. I'm going to go now," like Shukadeva Goswami just after his birth, he also left. He said, "I'm going to go now, but all you have to do is meditate and call my name, and at once I will come." And he gave her a benediction, another benediction, that the Parashramuni gave her two benedictions. "Although you're the daughter of a fisherman," normally fishermen don't smell so good. They smell bad. They smell like fish. "But your body will just be so fragrant, like a heavenly fragrance in all directions. And your son will become king." Two benedictions. So this happened later. She continued her... She went back and told her father, "Dad, got some good news." She didn't tell him the other part. "One sage gave me a blessing. I would have this fragrant body. And my son will become the king." "Oh, very good, very good. Very good. Do some more taking people across the river." That would be cool. So later, the king Santanu was wanting to cross the same river that Parashramuni wanted to cross. And guess who was in the boat taking him across the river? Satyavati. And Cupid went, "Chew," and Maharaj Santanu was, you know, he was attracted to Satyavati. So he went to Satyavati's father, the fisherman, said, "I'd like to marry your daughter." And the fisherman said, "No, but I'm the king. And you're a fisherman, and you should be thankful that your daughter is going to marry the king." He said, "No, I won't let my daughter marry you, because her son is to become king, and you already have a son." Santanu already had, who was Santanu's son that was already born? Bhishma. So he'll become king. "But my daughter's to become king, and so my daughter can't marry you. See you later, king." Oh, Santanu was singing the blues. He was really sad. He was wanting to marry this Satyavati as his second queen. And everybody saw the king going around really morose and sad. And so Bhishma understood. He asked the ministers. The minister said he wants to marry Satyavati. So he went to the father of Satyavati. And he asked Satyavati's father, "Can you please let your daughter marry my father?" And the king, the fisherman said, "No." He said, "Why not?" "Because my daughter was given the benediction by Parashramuni that her son will become king. So she has to marry someone else besides your father." He said, "Well, I'm the only son my father has, so I'll take a vow. I won't become king. Now will you marry my father? Will you allow my father to marry your daughter?" He said, "No." "Why not?" "Then because you may not become king, but if you get married and have a son, then your son will become king." "So no." So Bhishma said, "Okay, I'll take a vow I won't marry. My whole life I won't marry. Is that okay? Now will you allow your daughter to marry my father?" And the fisherman said, "Yes." So Bhishma had taken a vow. He won't marry. It was lifelong, having no relationship like that of marriage. And Satyavati married Santanu. And her son became king. She had two sons. And they became king. Then there's a long thing, more story. So, how does all of this have to... I wanted to recite two verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, verses that are glorifications of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because Vyasadeva spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to his son. Who is Vyasadeva's son? Yes. Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami was the son of Vyasadeva, and he spoke the Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami, and then Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit. Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. So it's, you know, that's a lot of talking. I mean, it's 12 cantos, and this is just one. So it's a long conversation, very important text. And when Shukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, there was a big audience of sages who had come to experience Maharaj Parikshit leaving this world because he had been cursed to die by being bitten by a snake bird. Now, there's no such thing as a snake bird. There's birds and there's snakes. What's a snake that has wings and flies? It's mystical. So by mystic power, one Brahmin's son named Sringi, he, by mantra, he created a curse where a snake would fly with wings and have such poison that as soon as it bit Maharaj Parikshit, instantly his body would burst into flames and he was ashes, gone. Gone. So Maharaj Parikshit knew he was going to die in 7 days. So he gave up his kingdom and gave the kingdom to his son, Maharaj Janamejaya. And he went to the bank of the holy river, fasting till death, called all the sages of his kingdom to come together so he would get instruction how he could live his life, the remaining 7 days of his life, in the best possible way. What are you to do when you have death notice? That was one of his questions. And that's the question that we're going to address. What's the duty of a person who's about to die? Or one who is, we're all about to die. That is, we're certain to die. It's either tomorrow or the next day or the next day, but one of those next days, death is certain. So, what should we do to prepare ourselves for that certainty? Just like you all are going to school, and one of the things everybody today in suburbia that goes to school knows they're going to have to do is they're going to go to college, right? There's no question about it. You're going to go to college. And what happens after college? You go to graduate school. And after graduate school, what do you do? You get a job. You're spending years and years, yeah, right, preparing for... So now what happens after that? And after that, and you know, what's the end of the line? There's a certainty over there, too. It's called kaput. You know, the show's over. Get out. The body's finished. And what are we doing to prepare for that? That's what Maharaj Parikshit wanted to know. How should we prepare for that certainty that we're going to meet death? What is our duty now to do to achieve that? So he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami heard it all and he was in the audience. Now he's asked by other sages that weren't in the audience, what messages did you hear from Shukadeva Goswami? Because Shukadeva Goswami is up there. He's like the topmost stage of spiritual perfection. We read some verses this morning. Sutta Goswami is saying about Shukadev, his spiritual master, that he's the spiritual master from whom all sages listen to or hear from. He is in the topmost stage of spiritual perfection. That's Shukadeva Goswami. And why is he considered like that? Because he not only heard the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, but he has assimilated it and perfectly realized the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he can explain it. And his motivation for explaining it, we read this morning, is that he has compassion for all those who are very sincere and serious to cross over the ocean of material existence and reach the other shore, the spiritual side. Getting restless, I know. Okay. I can pay attention to the adults now. So Sutta says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shukadeva, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who, out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge, Akhila Shruti Saramekam. We discussed the meanings of these words. Kila means supplement, but it's not like, you know, a vitamin supplement, a different kind of supplement. It's a supplement like when you write a paper, there's an addendum to it that explains the paper. That kind of supplement. So there's the Vedas that Vyas compiled, and then when he divided them, he explained them. That's the supplement. Like the Shrutis and the Smritis. It's a Smriti portion of the Vedas, but it's as Vedic as the Shrutis. Jiva Goswami gives this explanation, quoting from the Shrutis. It says the Smritis are like the port, when there's a chip in a golden ornament. Listen to this logic. When there's a chip in a golden ornament, you replace or you repair the chip in the golden ornament with gold. Similarly, this supplement to the Vedas is as Vedic as the Vedas. As gold is to gold, so the Shrutis, the Smritis are to the Shrutis. They're both gold. One is the supplement, and the other is the object. The other supplementing the object. But it's as of the same quality from the original source of the Vedas. Just like this is what Jiva Goswami explains in the Tattva Sandarbha. He explains that when Vyas divided the Vedas into four, there were some verses left over. Ramya, what's 4 divided into 31? 4 divided into 31. 7. 28. And how much left over? 3. So there's a remainder of 3. So when you divide 4 into 31, it goes 7 times with the remainder. It's not an even number. So when Vyas divided the Vedas into 4, there were some remaining verses. And he took those remaining verses that are part of the original Veda, and he presented the Smritis from the original Veda. They're as Vedic. This is Jiva Goswami's explanation. So same. Akhila Shruti Saramekam. Shruti means the Vedas, and Saram is the essence of the Vedas, or cream of the Vedas. Shruti Saram. Ekam is the Veda originally is one, and the Shruti Saram, the essence of the Vedas, this is Vedanta Sutra. And the supplement to Vedanta Sutra is this Bhagavatam, because it explains it. It explains Vedanta Sutra. As described in the Garuda Purana. Bhashyam Brahma Sutranam. There's a verse in the Garuda Purana that's describing the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says it's in 18,000 verses. 18,000 verses. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Akhilam Shruti Saramekam. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And it's compiled by Vyasadeva and spoken to Shukadeva Goswami. These verses from Garuda Purana. And it says that Purana is the best. The best. It's like, those of you that have been through academic training will appreciate this example. Supposing you walk into a boardroom filled with heads of the departments of a university, and you say, you know, I have a question to ask, but I only want to ask that question of the most intelligent amongst all of you here, the most learned. Who is the most learned amongst all of you here? And everybody points to one person as the most learned. Is that ever going to happen in an academic circle? No. But that's what happens in the Puranas. They point all to the Bhagavad Purana as the most final authority amongst all of them. That's what is being described here. Akilam Shruti Saramekam. And Sukadeva Goswami says, Sukadeva Goswami has the capacity to explain it with perfect realization. Therefore, we offer our obeisances unto him. And then the next verse, now that most of the kids aren't here. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udhirayat. Many times would recite this verse. Prabhupada would recite this verse sometimes before speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, because that's what the translation says. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udhirayat. One is the means of conquest. So the previous verse was saying that Shukadeva Goswami speaks in such a way, he gives realization, and those that are on the receiving end, if they have a strong desire to get on the other side of material existence and reach the spiritual shore, reach the kingdom of God, this Srimad Bhagavatam can carry them to that position. The next verse is saying, this is the means of conquest. The conquest of the darkness of material existence. It doesn't just mean literally when the sun goes down at night, but figuratively when the light of transcendental knowledge departs, then this world is filled with ignorance, whether it's daytime or nighttime. And where are we to get light in this age of darkness? That's one of the questions of the sages from the previous chapter. The sages wanted to know. I was just hearing Prabhupada speak this during when I was taking lunch prasad. I was listening to Prabhupada explain this point. When Krishna was present, religious principles were protected. Pritranaya sandhanam vinashaya shaduskritam dharma sangstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. In Krishna's presence, just by the touch of his two lotus feet on this earth, all auspiciousness was created by his spiritual presence. So the sages wanted to know, now Krishna has left. And that auspiciousness has also left. Where are principles of religion now going to be protected and upheld? Where is that shelter that we can look to? Where is that light? And the answer is given. In Sutta's response, it's now to be found within this Srimad Bhagavatam. It gives a metaphor that says, just as when the sun sets in the west, and so it's darkness, the moon may rise on the eastern horizon. And if the moon is as brilliant as the sun, but with very cooling and soothing rays, not scorching hot like the sun, but soothing and cooling, but as brilliant as the sun, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam, which appeared just after Krishna disappeared. Like the sun sets in the west, The moon may rise in the east. Shortly after, the full, brilliant as the sun, moon-like Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam appeared shortly after Krishna departed. How did the Bhagavatam appear? Shukadeva Goswami spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. Then Suta Goswami repeated it. So now Suta Goswami is offering his respectful obeisances and prayers to Shukadeva Goswami and to Narayan Rishi, the goddess of learning Saraswati, and the author Vyas. So, in the 12th canto, chapter 4, it describes, where did Narada Muni receive Srimad Bhagavatam from? In one sense, he received Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Lord Brahma. The 12th canto describes, Narada also heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Naranarayan Rishi. And Naranarayan Rishi, after explaining it to Narada, Narada then in turn instructed Vyas, who compiled it, but Narada also instructed it to Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And therefore, Sutta is offering his obeisances and to those who have received it, to Vyas, who authored it, to Shukadeva Goswami, who taught it to him. Because this is the mood of a Vaishnav. The mood of a Vaishnav is feeling oneself always dependent upon the mercy of other elevated and previous great acharyas. Always, always. Even if one is like Sutta, very qualified, because Sutta was also realized. The sages already said that to him in chapter 1. We want to hear from you, not only because you were in the audience and you heard from Shukadeva, but you understood it. And not only you've understood it, you've realized it. Because it's one thing to give academic understanding, it's another thing to give realized understanding. And that's the qualification. That Sutta is offering his respects to Narayan, who is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, Naranarayan Rishi, who taught it to Narada, Narada, who taught it to Vyas, and to the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and to his spiritual master. Because it's the means of conquest. O sages, this is the sages of Naimisharanya speaking. I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. In the second chapter, there is a phrase that repeats itself, Yenatma supersedati. And Prabhupada amplifies that message. Everybody wants to be happy. I don't know of anybody that doesn't want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. And Prabhupada spends the whole purport describing how people are busy asking questions and receiving answers and how to be happy, but notes with great finesse, no one's happy. That is, they're continuing to search for happiness and searching for happiness and searching for happiness. In the purport that we read this morning, listen to Prabhupada's words. There is no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy. No materialistic creature, be he the great Brahma or an insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent plan for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Yet the unhappy materialists can get out of it simply by desiring to get out of it. Unfortunately, they are so foolish they do not want to escape. The real happiness described in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita is the happiness of the soul. Real happiness is self-happiness. But materialistic, the statement is not like harsh. It's just reality. If we're searching for happiness of ourselves in something that we're not, then we're not going to be happy. Pretty logical, yeah? Say it again. If we abandon ourselves and take as our identity something that we're not and try to find happiness over there and that's something that we're not going to be happy because we've neglected ourselves. We've abandoned ourselves. It's like the discussion yesterday evening about addiction. What is addiction? People looking for happiness outside of something that's the real source of happiness. And they become compulsive about finding that happiness in that something else. It's not producing happiness. It's producing an addiction to finding that happiness. And there's detailed description that medical science has that says what's the cause, the prompt for that addiction. So they try to make something else happen that tells the brain or the body that they're getting that satisfaction through something else so they lose the addiction. But it doesn't solve the problem of abandonment of self. And so they find that addiction problems revert. Because people still aren't satisfied. Without self-realization, without connecting with the real source of happiness of the self, one will return to the same act, searching for happiness, because we want to be happy. And so this yenatma suprasediti is very important. That is self-indulgent kind of narcissism or, you know, selfishness. It's understanding who we really are and being contented within oneself. And the means of becoming contented within oneself is these messages that connect us with our real identity and the Supreme. And it works. It's very effective for those who are sincere and take this message as bhavosadach chotra manobiramat, as a natural medicine that cures the material disease of material existence. It's 8 o'clock. The very next verse is the first answer to the questions asked by the sages of Naimisharanya. So the questions that the sages of the first question the sages asked was a very good question. They said, in this age of Kali, people don't have much inclination for spiritual life. And so they're not going to go through the trouble of studying all the Vedas, nor do they have the capacity, if they did so, to understand what's the essence of all the Vedas. The Vedas are vast bodies of literature. Could you describe to us in like a little short summary statement, what's the essence of all the knowledge of all the Vedas, please? What's the essence of all that vast knowledge? That's the first question. The answer is the next verse. After glorifying Shukadeva Goswami and the previous personalities who delivered this knowledge to Shukadeva Goswami, Savaipungsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahoitaki pratyata yatma suprasediti. That's the first answer to that first question. Para dharma is the supreme occupation. Para is transcendental or supreme, like para, prakriti, the living entity is described in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita as para prakriti, superior nature, because living entity is conscious. So para dharma is the supreme occupation of the living being. Prabhupada explains that the normal, the conventional translation of Dharma into English is religion or religious duty, Dharma. But Prabhupada explains that the way that people take religion today, it means having a certain kind of faith. I'll try to end in about 5 minutes. A certain kind of faith. He gives the example. Supposing someone is born, like this happened to me just the other day. I was in New York City. I was checking in at the ticket counter, believe it or not, at American Airlines. And the lady behind the counter was from Trinidad. And she looked at me and said, "Oh, so you've converted?" That was, you know, I said, "No. I've just realized the truth. And that is, there's a Supreme Personality of Godhead and I should serve Him." She said, "Oh, so you converted." I said, "No. That means I was practicing incompletely, now I'm practicing more completely." I said, "How about you? How's your practices?" He said, "I've been to your temple." In Trinidad, she knows where the temple was in Trinidad. But people think of religion like that. You know, the external, the rituals, you know, the attire. And there are rituals that go with different religions according to faith. But what's the essence? If someone is born in this and becomes that, or by faith they change their faith and become a Hindu, becomes a Muslim, or a Muslim becomes a Christian, or something or something. That's the normal idea of religion. You're part of a certain religion. But what Prabhupada's point is that Dharma, the root word Dharma, means that which sustains, that which can't change. This can change and that can change. That's not Dharma. What is it that's unchanging, foundational? What is every living entity doing? Every living entity is serving. Ultimately, every living entity is serving God. So their faith may be, I should serve this way or I should serve that way. But the Dharma, the essence, the foundational thing is they're serving. And there's, Prabhupada would say, in this audience, there are many ladies and gentlemen. And can anyone say, you're not serving anyone? We're all serving someone. Because it's our constitutional position. We're servants of the Supreme. The parents are serving the children. The children are serving their school teachers. The school teachers are serving the taxpayers. We have multiple service relationships. There's nobody, the people running for office for government, they're serving the people. They may be in charge, but they're serving the people. People can pull them down. They're serving the people. We're all serving. So service to God, service to the Supreme, is Sanatana Dharma. So Paradharma is the supreme occupation of a living being. So the message of all the Vedas, according to what Sutta heard from Shukadeva Goswami, is the message of the Vedas teaches us Paradharma. What is that? Savai Pungsam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Hoksaje. It's devotional service unto Adhoksaja. And Adhoksaja means he who's beyond the senses. The Supreme who's beyond the senses. Aksha Ja. Adhoksaja. It's very interesting because devotional service is to use our senses to serve the master of the senses who's beyond the senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhaktir Uchite. Devotional service means using our senses to serve the master of the senses. Who is it, Hoksajya? Beyond our senses. It means there must be some faith. And there must be some guidance to make that faith properly reposed. The guidance of Shukadev Goswami type personalities, who by dint of their purity, they can experience adhoksaja by their purity. They can experience the transcendental Lord. And with our, even our material senses, we can use our material senses to serve the spiritual senses of the Supreme. This is a mystery. But it's a scriptural fact. That is because the senses and everything that's in creation comes from the Supreme. So everything has its spiritual quality because it's from the Supreme. And when properly connected to the Supreme, the spiritual quality is restored. The senses can act spiritually. The mind can act spiritually. The intelligence can act spiritually, although they're coverings of the soul. When the science is properly applied. So the message, the essence of the message of the whole of the Vedas is to serve the Supreme Personality Godhead at Hoksajya by means of devotional service. That's Paradharma. And when doing that, causelessly, knowledge and detachment awaken within the heart. We don't have to go extra, do something other to awaken, to find knowledge or detachment from this ocean of material existence. One of the biggest problems that prevent people from making spiritual advancement is they're attached to not making spiritual advancement. They're attached to being in this material condition of life. We're addicted to the material conditionings of life. Although it's the source of our misery, we're addicted. It's not healthy, but that's the situation. So when devotional service is practiced, causelessly, detachment awakens. Detachment awakens because ye natma supraseedati. There's happiness within the self. When there's happiness that awakens within the self, naturally detachment from other things arise. And knowledge also arises naturally. So this is the message. Sorry for the little detour over there with the kids, but I didn't know what to do with keeping them occupied.
Worked a little while.
Okay, so any comments or questions on this? This is the first question, the first answer. The next verse also is a very important verse in answering the sages of Naimisharanya. Krishna was the sun. When the sun sets, sometimes, just after the sun sets, the moon arises. The light of the moon is generally less than the light of the sun. But the metaphorical language, the poetic language of the Bhagavatam says, in this case, the cooling moon-like rays was as brilliant as the sun. And that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. Giving as much light as Krishna gave. Because the Bhagavatam is the literary manifestation of Krishna. So it's just like a reflection, like the moon is a reflection of the light of the sun. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. So as much light as Krishna gave to the world when he was present, the Bhagavatam can also give. The distinction is the rays of the moon are cool and soothing, whereas the rays of the sun are sometimes very intense and scorching. So all the illumination without the scorching. That's the Bhagavatam. The message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in other words, dismisses the demoniac mentality. Whereas Krishna with his Sudarshan Chakra and Gada would dismiss the demons. That's the scorching effect. But the Bhagavatam uses a different process. It purifies and elevates to those who give submissive oral reception to it. That's where religious principles are now taking shelter according to Sutta Goswami.
You were talking about Paradharma, which is the supreme occupation of the living being.
Paradharma is the supreme occupation, yeah.
I also heard something called Swadharma somewhere in...
Swadharma? Do you want to know the difference between Swadharma and Paradharma? That's your question?
Yes, my question.
Swadharma means one's own occupation, one's generally, the use of Swadharma has to do with one's conditional activities according to guna and karma. We have our particular dharma. Like, you know, what is one's inclination for activity? That's one's generally how it's used. It's used sometimes in other ways, but that's generally how it's used. So what's the suitable duty for you to do? Let's say, should you be, when you were younger, the question might have been there, should I marry or should I remain single? So it's, if there's some there's some evaluation of someone's character, the evaluation can be, you're suited to become a householder. Okay, now what kind of occupation should I have? I'll give a nice example of this. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur completed his education, some friend of the family gave him a high-ranking position in a business. And one of the first things he did in that high-ranking position in business was he found that the company made a mistake in favor of the company. They should have given additional funds back to the customer. So he gave the money back to the customer. And the owner of the company said, I think you have the wrong occupation. You're too honest. You should be a school teacher or something like that. It's not your Swadharma to be in business. One's inclination for work, generally that's the usage of the term. A brahmana should not be engaged in enterprise. It just doesn't work well. Nor should one who's by disposition a vaishya try to take the occupation of a brahmana. Doesn't work well. And so on. Chaturvarna Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says there are four types of occupations that are created by me according to guna and karma. According to one's guna and karma, one can determine an individual's Swadharma, what his duty is. But everyone's duty is to serve Krishna. Now, how you serve Krishna, how I serve Krishna, the next person serves Krishna, that's our particular manifestation of duty. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, how to always stay in the mood of dependence?
How to always what?
Stay in the mood of dependence.
In the mood of?
Dependence.
Dependence. Well, one way is to try to act independently and get slammed. And it hurts too much, so we don't want to do that again. That's one way. But better is that we understand by hearing and then we practice. So the material, you heard it correctly, the material condition is to think independently. So we can factor in that pushing is going on, independent. And that's acting independent of the Supreme is the material condition. That's what material means. And spiritual means to act in relation to the Supreme, in service to the Supreme. So the mood of service keeps us from this independence. Or one can just use common sense and consider. Most people don't use common sense. But common sense says, whatever it is that I have, whatever it is, you know, the shirt on your back, the food in your mouth, the roof over your head, all of those things could be taken like that. And we see it happen. And a variety of ways it can happen. I'm factually dependent. Every step and everything, factually dependent. To be able to even do involuntary acts like digest your food and blink your eyelid, we're dependent. For voluntary and involuntary acts. Just, you know, be a little thoughtful, and we're dependent. That's taking help from intelligence, taking help from scripture, taking help from advanced souls, a little common sense, we're dependent. And still we don't sustain that, so we act independently, and we get slammed. We all have that experience, like, that's another way to stay in line. But the other is much better.
When the senses are engaged in the service of Supreme, their spiritual, original spiritual quality is re-established.
Yes.
So, the spiritualization of intelligence,
I'm waiting for the punchline of your question. I'll repeat the question for those of you who couldn't. For re-spiritualization of intelligence, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi.
And so,
how do we re-spiritualize our intelligence, is your question?
That's where this...
There's two things. There's spiritualization of intelligence, and there's receiving direct instruction from Krishna how to reach Him. So the first part, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who study the sacred conversation are worshipping Me with their intelligence. Correct? He says that?
Yeah.
So you take an object, like take an iron rod and put it in fire, it becomes like fire. We take this intelligence and bring it to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized. That's one. Then another is, Krishna directly gives the intelligence by which you can come to Him. That's not just like spiritualized intelligence. That's direct instruction from Krishna. Direct guidance from Krishna. All right?
Thank you.
Okay. Looks like we're done. You have something. In mood of dependence.
When I'm depending on the Supreme Authority and Krishna, like, sometimes I feel like I won't be able to see that what step I could take. So, what is, how does that happen? I have to wait until
Krishna tells you what to do?
No, the instruction comes and what should I do?
Well, supposing you have an instruction that says walk across the room. Now, do you have to wait for, okay, now move your left foot. Don't move your right foot until you're told to. That's not the instruction. It's walk across the room. So there's a certain amount of common sense that's needed to fulfill a broad instruction. Like, for example, Krishna says, surrender unto me. That's an instruction. Okay, then how do I surrender unto Krishna? But one could ask, how do I surrender unto Krishna? Krishna gives instructions through scripture. There are angas, or the limbs of surrender. And there's six of them, so you can hear those six and then you can say, how do I do that? Recognize that, so one of them is, when there's something favorable for devotional service, you accept it. There's something unfavorable for devotional service, you reject it. Those are two out of six. So there's something favorable for devotional service. There's an opportunity to come and get spiritual association. I accept it, but I may have to balance that against something else, like my child has an exam tomorrow and I have to make sure that they have somebody home with them, so I may not be able to go to that function because I have this other service. So you have, there's practical things to balance in life. But the overriding thing is, whether you stay at home or you come to the program, you're doing that which is favorable for serving Krishna. That's the principle that stands above the details. And as long as you're sincerely acting according to your best understanding of how to please Krishna favorably, and you're accepting that, Krishna will guide you. It's a detail. Rupa Goswami explains this in Nectar Devotion. There's principles and there's details. Stick with the principles. The details will work themselves out. If the detail needs some adjustment, that's okay. Krishna will accept that you're acting sincerely on principle. And then experience over time and purification and some help from others that are experienced. You just stay with the principle. Everything will come out. Sometimes we get lost in details and forget principles. Watch out for that. It's good to consider details, but don't, if it's not clear, stick with the principle. Trust that Krishna will recognize your sincere effort to serve Him in a favorable way and avoid things that are going to impede your progress towards Him. Okay. Yes.
I was reading Prabhupada's Nectar, and in there, Prabhupada was saying something about like, if you don't immediately sleep when you go to bed, you'll like be met by Yamaraj.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was perfect.
I want to read that little bit of Nectar.
He's so Prabhupada says two things in that. One, he says that if you like take a bath right after eating, or if you don't fall asleep immediately on going to bed, then you need to have a bath.
So,
and I thought she asked me, doesn't have a trick to look for that, but you know,
you got me. Who was he speaking to? Way to trace this out might be to find out.
It was just like what Prabhupada said.
But who did he say it to? Didn't say.
No.
When I get things like that, they're just like, where did that come from? I write to Hari Sori and say, did you ever hear anything like that? And often you get back one, well, I didn't hear one like that, but I heard one close to it, and he gives you another one. So send me that one, that quote, and I'll send it to Hari Sori. Say that Rami wants to know the answer to this question. He'll give me an answer.
I think it was Hamsa Durga Paramatma.
Okay. But because Hari Sori was Prabhupada's personal servant for so long, he may know the inside story on that one. He may not also, but I'm sure we'll get back something interesting. I don't know. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. I brought with me some Mahaprasadam from Radha Govinda Temple.